You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Rupert Murdoch hired Roger Ailes to create the Fox News Channel for News Corporation in 1996, and today it's the most profitable cable news network by a huge margin, and Roger Ailes is one of the most influential figures in American journalism and politics. In a new unauthorized biography of Mr. Ailes, New York Magazine contributing editor Gabriel Sherman examines the rise and the possible fall of Roger Ailes. The book, which is published by Random House, is called The Loudest Voice in the Room. It's already stirred quite a bit of controversy, and I'm very pleased that it brings Gabriel Sherman to our show today. Hello.
Thank you for having me.
How powerful is Roger Ailes within the Republican Party right now?
Well, you know, this book really traces the rise of television as the most powerful communications medium of the 20th century, and Roger Ailes, as the avatar of this medium, really created an institution that surpassed the Republican Party. And, you know, Fox News speaks to more people on a daily basis than really any single person in Republican politics. And it is a phenomenon that Roger Ailes himself foretold after the 1968 campaign, when he was a young television advisor to Richard Nixon. He predicted a day when television would replace the political party.
Nixon wondered about participating in these kinds of gimmicks.
Yeah, Roger Ailes really was a prophet in a way. You know, he envisioned television as the key to speaking directly to the people.
But your colleague at New York Magazine, Frank Rich, wrote in the current issue that Fox News is in terminal decline. Do you agree?
Well, I do agree. And, you know, the end of my book really traces the rise and fall of Roger Ailes, because the medium that made him so powerful is in its twilight. And in certain ways, I feel a lot of sadness for him, because he created an empire, but like all emperors, he's sitting atop a crumbling foundation trying to maintain his power.
Is it of his own making, the crumbling aspect?
You know, that's a fascinating question.
And the reason I ask is, I remember years ago, Rush Limbaugh was credited with being behind a Republican political electoral sweep. Well, nobody is saying that about him now. Not that he's lost listenership. I think he still has a huge audience. But maybe we sometimes give people credit for power that they don't necessarily have.
I think it's also a question of timing. I mean, if you look at my book traces the rise of Fox News and the American political landscape, and I sort of paint the peak of Fox's power, true political power, in the middle part of the last decade, about 2005 or so, because the George W. Bush years were really defined by the politics on Fox, this sort of me versus the world, jingoism, America is, you know, our way or the highway. I mean, that was the politics that Fox broadcast. And all the other media outlets really kind of fell into line after 9/11 behind Fox. And so the peak really traces the fortunes of the Bush years. You know, after Hurricane Katrina, the fortunes of the Bush White House tumbled, and also Fox's ratings declined.
Former Bush speechwriter David Frum has said, I'm quoting, "Republicans originally thought that Fox worked for us. Now we're discovering that we work for Fox." And then he went on to say that the thing that sustains a strong Fox network is the thing that undermines a strong Republican Party.
It's a very smart point, and I think it gets to the heart of the tension that my book explores, that Roger Ailes has created an empire, but what makes great television ultimately is not an effective political strategy.
In 2012, Democrats held on to the presidency, gained some seats in Congress, but the Republicans have been gaining in the states. How does Ailes see Republican performance in recent years?
Well, it's funny. You know, Roger Ailes is a master of the art of blame shifting, and he's done it throughout his career. He's skirted away from multiple controversies, and you know, after the 2012 election, he famously told his executives that the GOP couldn't organize a one-car funeral. So he blames the failing fortunes of the Republican Party on the GOP without acknowledging that the circus that Fox broadcasts has played a role in damaging their party's brand.
And in May 2011, you wrote an essay in New York Magazine, The Elephant in the Green Room, in which you argued that Ailes might have been costing the GOP. This is before the election,
yes,
the 2012 presidential election. What was he doing that you thought was causing trouble for the GOP?
Well, that piece, which grew out of reporting I was doing for the magazine and ultimately for the book, really tried to understand how the circus that Ailes put on his network was influencing politics. And, you know, Ailes elevated people on the far right of the spectrum, Sarah Palin, Herman Cain, Glenn Beck, and made them true national phenomenons. And in many ways, they became the public face of the Republican Party. And that created a lot of tension within the Republican Party. And there's a scene in my book that describes a confrontation that happened between Karl Rove, arguably the establishment power broker in the Republican Party, and Roger Ailes. And Rove goes to Ailes and he says, "Why are you elevating people like Sarah Palin and Christine O'Donnell, who is a Senate candidate in Delaware, who famously said she was not a witch?" And Rove says, "Why are you elevating people like this? Because these people are fringe characters and they're never going to help us win elections." And what you see in that exchange is that Roger Ailes is a genius political strategist, but he's also a television producer, and he looks for characters. And what made for great characters on television, what Rove was pointing out, that this was hurting the political fortunes of the party. And we're now to a point where Fox News has surpassed the party, and they can't win national majorities.
Well, you quote a Republican source saying that Ailes thought Sarah Palin was an idiot, but he still put her on. Had he already formed that opinion when McCain first chose her as his running mate?
No, that's also a really wonderful story I unpack in the book. He, you know, Roger Ailes is many things, but at the heart he is a TV producer. His roots are in television. It goes back to the early history of daytime television. He was a young producer on the Mike Douglas show. He understands that television is a performance. And when he saw Sarah Palin at the 2008 Republican convention, he said to his executives that she hit it out of the park. All of a sudden, there was energy on the right. She was connecting with an audience the way a television performer would connect with an audience. And he was captivated by it. And there was a race after the election to sign her, to give her a TV deal. And he was captivated by her power to attract an audience. But quickly he realized, as many on the right in the Republican Party did, that she was a loose cannon. And she was politically a liability for the party. And so you see in that the tension between Ailes as the TV man and Ailes as the party man.
Well, he hired her, then he fired her, and then he rehired her.
And that's because, you know, Fox has a complicated relationship with Palin's audience. You know, she is very popular amongst the Tea Party right. Fox needs the Tea Party right as part of its audience base. And so they can't fully decide, do we cast out these far-right candidates or do we embrace them and keep them at arm's length?
Well, then we have to deal with the whole issue of his feelings about the Tea Party. I get the feeling, based on his history, that his inclinations are to slightly more moderate kind of Republican. He tried to get Chris Christie to run. At the same time, he puts people like Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck on the air.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Ailes is he's such an interesting character. You know, one of the joys of this book was every day I got up to do reporting, the story got more interesting and he got more complicated as a character. And on his politics, you know, his personal politics in many ways are firmly in line with the Tea Party right. He is he wants to lock down the borders. He is skeptical of federal government spending. He wants low taxes. He's questionable about surveillance and civil liberties. But here's the point. He has worked through GOP moderates. And so Ailes, while he identifies with the Tea Party in terms of on the issue level, his career has been spent through working through electable candidates: Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Mitch McConnell, Phil Graham, Rudy Giuliani. You go down the line, his bread and butter candidates were centrist Republicans. And so in 2012, we had a situation where he couldn't find a moderate to run. They just did not want to get into the race.
Well, Richard Nixon today would be considered very much a moderate Republican. He probably would be under attack from the Tea Party.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Gabriel Sherman is a contributing editor at New York Magazine. He has written for many other publications as well. And his first book is The Loudest Voice in the Room, How the Brilliant, Bombastic Roger Ailes Built Fox News and Divided the Country. After Hurricane Sandy, President Obama and Governor Christie worked together to aid victims in New Jersey, and Ailes apparently was furious. At the same time, he had earlier tried to convince Christie to run for president.
It was all about the picture. you know, after Hurricane Sandy, you know, Christie gave President Obama that golden photo op on the beach where they embraced. And Ailes, being the image maker, you know, he is the master of his generation at using the power of images to communicate a political message. You know, he saw that image and he told his executives that that image of the bipartisan embrace was damaging to Romney. And even in the meeting that I describe in the book with his polling staff, where his chief numbers guy says, you know, well, we haven't seen the data that sort of that says that this picture really hurt Romney's fortunes. Ailes didn't believe it. He says, well, it couldn't have helped him either. So you see this, he is captivated by the power of images to communicate a message.
After the scandal over the closing of two lanes on the George Washington Bridge is still simmering. If it was deliberate, is that the kind of thing that Ailes would support? Because some Republicans are saying that this was the kind of strong-arm tactics that politicians should apply. And then many Republicans, including Rudy Giuliani and Haley Barbour, have also come to Christie's defense. Has Fox News?
Well, what's interesting there, let me just revisit this question on two levels. I think what's so interesting about Ailes as a political strategist is you have to divorce the way he thinks about issues from the issue itself and how it plays in public. And there's a wonderful scene in the book that describes one of Ailes' early campaigns after he had worked for Richard Nixon. And one of his candidates was a far-right candidate running for office in Maine. And he says, you know, he's campaigning against Social Security, these kind of very far-right positions. And Ailes literally grabs the candidate, pulls him into an alleyway after a town hall speech, and roughs him up against the wall and says, you cannot go out there and say these things, even if you believe it. This is just unelectable. And so I could imagine him thinking, you know, even if he thinks Christie, you know, it was the right strong arm tactics to play hardball on the bridge, it was a dumb political play. I mean, it blew up in his face. And so Ailes is throughout his career has been smart enough to knowing where the line is and not crossing the line and giving your opponents a wedge.
On the other hand, he also seems to be somebody who holds grudges, and maybe he was pleased to see Christie brought down a peg.
That's possible. I mean, Fox has skirted the Christie story. They've been, they haven't been out front. Obviously, MSNBC, for partisan reasons, has been hammering it. Ailes, this also touches on another point, that the whole idea of fair and balanced. And, you know, in the early years of Fox, fair and balanced really was a more credible mantra. At least it hadn't been accepted by the public as a fiction. But now
they said it was fair and balanced because they were balancing the leftist bias of the mainstream media.
Well, actually, early in the network's history, they said more than that. They said literally, we give both sides. Now, more recent years, I had a very senior Fox person tell me that Ailes' own thinking of fair and balance changed, and he felt CNN and MSNBC had gone so far to the left that Fox is the balance. And so fair and balanced, even though the audience believes that they're getting both sides, is really a check on the rest of the media. So to go easy on the Christie story is a way for Fox to balance the over-coverage on the other networks.
Is CNN all the way on the left?
I would not agree with that, no.
My guest is Gabriel Sherman. His book, The Loudest Voice in the Room, How the Brilliant, Bombastic Roger Ailes Built Fox News and Divided a Country. It has already become a bestseller. It's published by Random House. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. My guest is Gabriel Sherman. His book, The Loudest Voice in the Room, How the Brilliant, Bombastic Roger Ailes Built Fox News and Divided a Country. It's published by Random House. What about Ailes' personality? How does that play into all of the things we've been talking about and the things that we will be talking about?
It is central to understanding Fox News. You know, this book started as a book to report the history of Fox News. It was the most dominant cable news network, had revolutionized TV and news. But very quickly into the reporting, it changed into an exploration of Roger Ailes as an American icon, because the network is a reflection of his whole worldview. His personality permeates every facet of the network, from who he puts on the air to the colors on the screen to the graphics to the look to the press strategy and how they market it. It's all about him.
Well, the New York Times Review started off with a couple of stories about Roger Ailes moving to Garrett, New York, in Putnam County, and how he had become a kind of the local bully, to the point where a new newspaper, the Phillipstown paper, has been started up to counter the fact that Roger Ailes bought the local newspaper, the Putnam County News and Recorder, and was using it to promote his ideas. You also suggest that he can be a bit paranoid.
Yeah. You know, the story of Roger Ailes' adventures in Putnam County is a microcosm. It's a way to really see how he has used media to change the country on the level of a small town. It's a wonderful set piece that brings to life these characters of how they've interacted with him. And he bought the local paper, and he decided that the town was far to the left. And the main issue at the time in 2008 and 9 was zoning. And he used the paper to attack the zoning overhaul ferociously, the same way Fox would attack Obama's health care law, the stimulus, all the policies that the Obama White House was pushing. And it divided the town. And the town, which had had political divisions, but they were kind of below the surface and everyone knew everyone, all of a sudden the town was cleaved into these camps. And then you had a competing media organization start up. In the same way MSNBC has gone to the left, you had a competing media organization try to balance Ailes. And you saw within the span of a few years the way this town, which had kind of worked out its divisions internally, had been split down the middle. And that was this wonderful way to sort of show how he has done this to the whole entire country on the level of a small town.
Didn't he threaten people who disagree with him with ruining them?
Yeah, you know, it was unbelievable.
Well, his wife is the editor.
She's the publisher of the paper. Oh. And it was, as a reporter, I couldn't imagine coming into this story to see a man of the power and the stature of Roger Ailes, who's been a counselor to presidents. He can get heads of state on the phone. He's courted by every national Republican. I would hear these stories from local politicians of these phone calls he would get and these bullying phone calls. And it almost felt to me like he was spending all of his time consumed with the machinations of this small town. And I had someone I interviewed up there told me this comment, which really stuck with me. They said, you know, after seeing how Roger Ailes runs his business up in Putnam County, I worried one day that I would turn on Fox News and see static. Because this person could not understand how the channel actually operated and was so successful when its CEO and its chairman was so obsessed with small-town politics.
Can he also be funny? Does he have a good sense of humor?
Oh, he has the timing and the range of a stand-up comic. And I think humor has been one of the enduring reasons why Roger Ailes has gotten to where he is. He has been able to get out of every situation by using humor. And, you know, The sort of ultimate get-out-of-jail card he plays whenever he's really confronted on something is that he was joking. And now one example I describe in the book is when he tried to recruit General David Petraeus to run for president. And amazingly, Bob Woodward of the Washington Post obtained an audio recording of this meeting in which an Ailes emissary was in Kabul, Afghanistan, lobbying the general to run for president. And when this came out in the newspaper and Ailes was confronted by it, he said, oh, I was just joking. And I think this idea of humor as the ultimate dodge is one of the reasons why Ailes has been so successful.
Many people in defense say that MSNBC is just its ideological opposite and they cancel each other out.
Well, I would agree. MSNBC is an ideological opposite. It's a liberal, progressive cable channel. It doesn't have much original reporting on the air itself. But I would not say it balances each other out, because liberals don't talk to MSNBC the way the conservatives talk to Fox. If you are not on Fox News, if you are a prominent Republican, if you are a prominent conservative writer, you're a thinker, if you are not on Fox News, you are not relevant to your movement. Whereas if you're a liberal and you don't appear on MSNBC, I mean, it does not affect your fortunes.
What about some of the non-political stuff, or is everything political? The war on Christmas, for example.
Well, where do you draw the line?
Is that show business?
It's show business, but show business is a form of power, and that gives him political power.
Just 1 month ago, the Pew Research Center reported that one-third of Americans reject the idea of evolution. Has conservative politics gone further than Ailes wanted? For example, does he see any risks in the extreme positions taken by some Republicans?
I think he does.
Climate change?
No, he is a firm denier of climate change. He has said, and I quote these in my book, that global warming is a hoax. It's a conspiracy. It's a plot by the United Nations to get control of America's resources. So on certain issues, he is firmly on board with the far right.
Haven't polls indicated that Fox viewers are among the worst informed members of the public when it comes to current events?
Well, it reminds me of a quote Ailes' mentor gave when they were launching Fox. His name was Chet Collier. He was a longtime TV executive. And he said, people want to feel informed. They don't want to be informed. And Fox was really created with that ethos, this idea of giving people this feeling of getting the truth and getting the gospel.
What Stephen Colbert has called truthiness.
I think he's built a cottage industry out of that.
Ultimately, Rupert Murdoch is his boss at Fox. How much of a free hand does Murdoch give Roger Ailes in running Fox News?
A complete free hand. I mean, that's one of the this keys to understanding the success of Fox is that Roger Ailes has ultimate independence of programming the network as he sees fit.
Well, that must suggest a certain amount of trust because he has been a lot more hands-on on the Wall Street Journal, the New York Post, and even some of the British newspapers.
Well, I think in the Murdoch world, the ultimate guarantee of trust is profits. And it's important to point out that the Wall Street Journal, neither the Wall Street Journal or the New York Post, make significant amounts of money. And in fact, the New York Post loses something on the order of $50+ million a year. Fox News, in contrast, generates $1 billion of profit. It is the single most profitable division of Rupert Murdoch's media empire. And so
even more than the movie business?
It is more than the movie business on certain years because the movie business is up or down. So if the 20th Century Fox film studio has a hit like the science fiction film Avatar, they will make tremendous amounts of money. But if they have a string of flops, it's a cyclical business, whereas Fox News is essentially an ATM machine for Rupert Murdoch.
His top news managers in Britain have been very close to the British Conservative Party. How close has Ailes been to GOP leaders here in the United States?
Oh, incredibly close. I mean, they speak all the time. The national Republican power structure is constantly in contact with Roger Ailes.
And the Tories regularly, or at least are reported to have gotten approval on policy decisions from Murdoch. Did GOP leaders do anything like that with Ailes?
I think one fascinating case study is to show the reverse, where Ailes would suggest policy. After 9/11, Ailes wrote a private memo to George W. Bush. He sent it to Karl Rove, in which he advocated for a maximum military response. And Ailes told George W. Bush that if the United States launched a massive bombing campaign, that the American people would support him. And imagine, just let's step back for a second. We have the head of a major news network telling the president of the United States, if you start a war, essentially I will guarantee that my network will be behind this war.
He must have thought he was William Randolph Hearst.
And I will give you the pictures. I will deliver the news stories that support this policy that I have just written your chief advisor to advocate for. And that to me is a shocking sign of the way politics and media after 9/11 came together.
Well, how closely have Rove and Ailes worked together? Rove did have that embarrassing moment on election night on Fox.
They've been working together ever since Karl Rove helped George W. Bush win the White House in 2000. And what's interesting to point out is that while Karl Rove is the big, well-known name in politics and has been the subject of books and magazine articles, what Republicans tell me is that Rove is intimidated by Ailes. And in fact, the power dynamic between the men is reverse, whereas Ailes is the more powerful figure, and Karl Rove is subservient to Roger Ailes. Karl Rove would not have power today if Roger Ailes did not put him on Fox News.
Gabriel Sherman's book is The Loudest Voice in the Room, How the Brilliant, Bombastic Roger Ailes Built Fox News and Divided a Country. It's published by Random House. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Rupert Murdoch's news companies in Britain have been embroiled in scandals about hacking into personal email and cell phone accounts. You found that Ailes has used fake email addresses. Isn't that a good idea?
Well, it's a sign of his mercenary PR tactics. I mean, it was another example of, if just do a thought experiment for a second. Imagine if we found out that the executive editor of the New York Times was using fake email addresses to target the New York Times' rivals. Could you imagine the scandal? I mean, there would be a public editor investigation. There would be the reader, New York Times readers, I would imagine, would be outraged. And yet, my book reveals that Roger Ailes created a fake blog to attack Fox's rivals, CNN and MSNBC, and down the line. And it's just seems like it's business as usual. It just shows me that Roger Ailes has had this career where the rules, as they're conventionally understood, do not apply.
He got away with another thing he was accused of, which was offering, when he was at NBC, offering a staffer a raise if she made herself sexually available to him. How come that hasn't reverberated?
You know, I've wondered that myself. You know, that anecdote, which was told to me by the woman in question on the record, as well as I spoke to other sources on the record who could verify her story. You know, it was a long time ago, but I think it's revealing of the gender dynamics that exist. The culture Ailes grew up in the 1950s, when men, white men especially, were dominant. And I've always wondered, you know, this was the culture of the sexual culture that Ailes came out of. It was, I've heard stories at Fox News of the, you know, power dynamic between men and women. I've wondered if more women at Fox News would ever come forward with their own stories. You know, Bill O'Reilly famously was embroiled in a sexual harassment lawsuit in 2004. So it's not the first time this has been public. But I've always wondered, that kind of remark, is it reflective of a larger worldview?
Before your book ever appeared in the stores, Fox News was leveling criticism that you hadn't adequately checked the facts. He did ask Ailes to participate, and he turned you down.
Oh, from the very beginning, you know, I reached out to Roger Ailes both in person and in writing. More than a dozen times I sought to sit down with him and discuss every fact that was in the book. I spoke with his attorneys. I hired a team of two fact-checkers who spent more than 2,000 hours vetting every word in the manuscript. So this notion that the book wasn't fact-checked, to me, is just a way to distract from the fundamental truth, which is that Fox News has not challenged one specific piece of my reporting. And Roger Ailes is the one who ultimately decided not to participate in the fact-checking.
Well, Janet Maslin, in her New York Times review, took you to task for not making it clear at the beginning of the book that you hadn't personally interviewed Ailes. Do you think that that was a fair point, or have you been following the suggestion that she has ties to Fox News herself?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The book has gotten a lot of positive reviews, generated a lot of chatter. And so, you know, in regards to Maslin's review, I only know what I've read, you know, on certain reports. And, you know, the notion that she has a close personal friend who comes off negatively in my book, who's a major part of a chapter, I'm very curious what the New York Times' standards would be about that disclosure. And I, you know, that's a question for the New York Times. And I know others have raised the questions to the Times, and I'd be curious if they'll answer it.
How many of the things that you raise here showed up in Zev Chafet's authorized biography of Ailes that came out just last month, obviously written as a way of deflecting the kind of criticism they expected when your book came out?
You know, I read Zev Chafet's book last year very closely, and it was incredibly revealing of Roger Ailes in ways I don't think Roger Ailes intended it. And I say that because there were episodes that Ailes recounted in Chafet's book that I had done all of my own reporting on, and they happened completely differently than the way Ailes described it. Now, of course, we are all unreliable narrators of our own story, but the degree to which essentially Chafet's book and my book are almost these funhouse mirrors, they're separate realities, is almost a parable to understand how Fox News creates a separate reality field where Fox will describe events that the rest of the media won't, and there is no through line between the two. And so they exist on parallel planes, and they don't intersect. And if you only consume Fox, just as if you only would read Chaffetz's book, you would have a completely distorted sense of the truth.
What do you think Ailes thinks of Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert when they regularly ridicule some of the stories on Fox? Most recently, Stephen Colbert on the official psychiatrist that Fox employs, who always seems to find insanity on the Democratic side.
I think on the one hand, Ailes would respect them as TV performers. You know, they've built, he would say they've built these audiences off his back. I think he once said in an interview that Jon Stewart once claimed he was, you know, he was a socialist. I think Ailes would just view them as part of this leftist media cabal.
Stewart doesn't come across as a socialist.
I don't think, to me, anyone with Jon Stewart's salary, to me, would be a capitalist.
And Stephen Colbert brags about how much money he makes. Yes. In an interview, you said, what I learned is that Roger Ailes has created a political organization that employs journalists. But do political organizations aim to make a profit, as Ailes has at Fox? After all, by the measures that matter to people in television, viewers and revenue, Roger Ailes is still a huge success.
He's a 20th century business icon. You know, he's an entrepreneur of the first order. You know, he reversed the economics of political advertising. You know, in the 1980s, when Ailes was the preeminent political strategist of his generation, he would have to pay the networks to buy time. His candidates would pay the networks to buy time to carry his messages. With Fox News, he's reversed the equation. Fox News is paid by advertisers to reach his audience. He has created the most profitable form of political messaging known to man. And that, to me, he should be, you know, up on the plane of a Steve Jobs, a Bill Gates. He is a visionary business person.
Ailes gave President George H.W. Bush advice for an interview with Dan Rather. He said, don't accept anything Rather says to you. Don't accept the premise of any question. I don't even care if it's right. Stay on the offense the whole time and wear him out. Would he think that somebody who did that to O'Reilly or to Hannity was using a good strategy? Would he admire that?
I mean, I couldn't sort of get in his head about what he would think about that, but I think that quote is so revealing of how he describes and how he speaks of journalism. I mean, this notion that there is not a fundamental exchange between a question and an answer, that there shouldn't be some mutual search for some truth, some essential truth between the two, the question and the answer. You know, Ailes views journalism as the enemy. You know, he said to a Fox anchor once who wanted to do an interview with a journalist, why would you talk to them, meaning the reporters? Ailes said, they are the enemy. This notion that journalists who ask questions and search for answers are the enemy, I think tells you a lot of the culture that he's created at Fox News. I mean, just one more point I'll make. Journalism is inherently a messy business. If you don't know what the answer is, you don't know where you're going. You have to find there. It's a journey. Roger Ailes views the world, the way he talks about journalism is he knows what the answer is, and then he goes out and he programs to deliver that answer. It's just a fundamentally different approach. He has a message. He is a public relations executive. He wants to communicate a message. That's not journalism.
Does he set an agenda every day for his staff?
There's two meetings a day. The most important news meeting happens in his office at 8 a.m. It is when he gives his monologue about the news. And his worldview radiates out from that meeting throughout the network.
Gabriel Sherman is a contributing editor at New York Magazine. He's also written for The New York Times, The New Republic, The New York Observer, GQ, among other publications. Since 2012, he's been a Bernard L. Schwartz Fellow at New America Foundation. And his first book is The Loudest Voice in the Room, How the Brilliant, Bombastic Roger Ailes Built Fox News and Divided a Country. It's published by Random House. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.